Welcome to another episode of Salesforce Trails and Trials, where we help you accelerate your career and turn soft skills into hard money by mining gold from project failures, bringing insights from ecosystem experts, and inspiration from others on the trail. Now joining us with over 20 years in the ecosystem, please welcome our host, John Klein.
Welcome everyone to another episode of Salesforce Trails and Trials. Today we have quite a treat. We have Paul Pierce with us, and I want to give a little background and context because back when I started my own software company back in 1998, I was looking on how to better tell a story with software. And so I discovered this great demo program and book that radically transformed my ability to tell stories, to do discovery and such. And so I'm really excited to bring Paul today, who just has a great background, a great story, and is essentially related to that tool that really helped me back in my past. And so as Salesforce pros, I know you're going to find a great bit of value on today's call about how you tell stories and also how you can emulate a great life lived with Paul. So welcome, Paul.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. What a kind introduction, John. It's great to be here and great to see you and looking for a wonderful conversation today.
Yeah, well, my pleasure. I only bring the best on the show. So I just want people to recognize that.
Love it. I love it. Thank you. Well, I'd say we have a lot in common because the time you were starting your first software company was when I was entering the software world back in 96, 97. And man, I've been doing conversations, demonstrations, discovery, and a lot of things for many, many years with a lot of hard lessons learned, but some really cool concept as well. So
yeah, I love it. I actually love to go back and start at that point of genesis. There's a lot of people who think about when they think about the technology industry, they're very kind of binary in their thinking, like I'm either a tech person or I'm not. And I actually don't think that's the case. I think there's a lot of people who have an impact to make. And because software is eating up our world, as the phrase goes, everybody is going to need to interact with it in some way. So I'm curious, if you go back into the beginnings of, you know, maybe it's your childhood or such, I'm curious, where did you find out that you had a knack for the software world or maybe a curiosity? Yeah.
Oh my goodness, man, we're going back to junior high and hello world. But it was actually interesting. My father was a banker, and this must have been back in the early 80s. And the bank purchased an Apple, the first model, maybe it was an Apple II. I don't remember the exact model, but I remember it sitting outside of the president's office, who used it as a word processor, I believe. And he was bleeding edge. He had to have the best. And my dad worked crazy hours, and I don't know, maybe I was slightly ADD and hyperactive, and my mom couldn't stand to have me in the house. But oftentimes when the bank closed after dinner, I would go back with my father, and I saw that computer over there, and he would let me run the bank, usually unsupervised to some extent. And I remember I clicked and I turned that thing on, and it came up with a prompt, and I was just playing when I started typing. And then I started looking at the boxes, and I saw a word or two, and I typed it in, and all of a sudden, boom, it came to life. And that was the first time I think I realized that I love technology. And ever since then, whether it's been from programming or being a pre-sales consultant to leading teams, man, I've loved the technical aspect of the job.
Nice. Now, did you have Oregon Trail on that computer?
I don't know if it was on that computer, but it came pretty quick.
Right. Yeah. I hope you didn't die from dysentery.
Yeah, absolutely. My ox died. Well, that's fun. That's good. But, you know, you said something that I think is very, very important in the form of like sales, storytelling, and meeting customers' expectations. And it just jumped out to me about sometimes people lend themselves or believe they're more technical. I think that can be a real limitation when it comes to really helping our customers succeed at what they're trying to do, if that makes sense. Maybe I should elaborate. You know, one of the things I was thinking is we do training. So I'm the president of an organization called Great Demo, and we do training for organizations, both on discovery as well as presentation skills for doing software demonstrations. And, you know, it's interesting because one of the things I typically hear technicians say is, well, discovery is not my job. I don't need to do discovery. I'm just here to give the demo. And I always think like, wow, that's such an interesting perspective, because if we're really looking at customer success and driving value for our customers, as well as our organizations, You could suggest that maybe someone in business development has an initial qualification conversation with a client, and they hand it to an account exec. And the first thing that client's going to ask for is like, I'll tell you a little bit, but I want a demo. I want to see it in action. And so even in the perfect world, when account executives have discovery and we know what the customers want, I've never seen anyone go to a meeting, a presentation, a solution representation that didn't have more people in it than were ever part of the initial discovery. It's always thinking like if you're a practitioner, if you're meeting with a customer, every call is discovery. And it's not just reduced to the account exec in the role. It's anyone who's talking to a client. And I don't know, that's the first thing that just kind of popped in my mind when you said that technical aspect. Maybe
It's a good point. And just to bring it down to the roles that might be listening to this call. So essentially you have two sides, right? So in the Salesforce ecosystem, we have the ISV side. So these are the products that are on the AppExchange. So they have a typical model you're talking about. There's the account exec, maybe the BDR who is part of that process. And then ultimately there might be, a solution engineer or something. Then you have the consulting side, which you have a business analyst, right? Maybe a solution architect who's discovering information, putting together in kind of software bits that they can go back and demo to the client to validate, right? And there's different types of demos as well we talk about, right? There's vision demos, there's feasibility, there's other aspects. So on both sides of that, I do think that there is sometimes a little bit of a pigeonholing or a kind of stay in your lane kind of mindset sometimes that, in the case of on the consulting side, you might have, the business analyst does the discovery and pulls out the information. And the solution architect puts that together into, a software story. But the solution architect in some ways might feel like, the discovery's already happened. That was in a specific meeting called discovery. So I think your point is actually really important in that we don't know when the client is actually going to reveal something of value. Many times they might forget, and something that happened in the meeting, something we talked about, much like your catalyst just a second ago, right? Just highlighting something came up and a light went off in my head, and now I want to talk about it. I call this kind of a popcorning effect, right? Like you have no idea when it's going to pop sometimes,
I love that
right? And
analogy.
so you, but you want to be available when it is popping so that you can take advantage of it and then synthesize it back into your larger story.
Oh my
And you
goodness.
can provide the most value, right?
I just to pile onto your analogy there is a way that and you can start to predict when the popcorn's going to pop. And that's by applying heat and oil. And I think when you understand like what's the right oil and what's the right temperature to do that in, then you can actually have some pretty powerful conversations. It is a matter of fact, you started this session talking a little bit about storytelling. And I think the storytelling is the heat and the oil. If I can quickly just talk about as I'm warming things up, what a story, and there's only two versions of the story that matter to the customer. It's either the story about them or it's a story of someone similar to them. And so as you tell that story in 2 minutes or less, and we have a methodology for that, but that's adding the heat. It's getting the oil up to temperature essentially. And then with the right question, boom, things start to pop. And I think that's the secret ingredients into making sure you've got the best popcorn or the best solution, or better yet, the best understanding of what your customer needs is applying those two things and it being focused on them or someone like them.
Yeah, it's a really good strategy. And what I like about this is when we talk about the demo as a device, most of the time we think about, demos have a different purpose. So for example, many times people will go and whether it's a software vendor or even dealing with buying the software from Salesforce themselves, they're going to see a vision demo. Salesforce is going to put everything inside that org. It's not customized to them necessarily. Maybe there's a logo or something, but it's all the good stuff put into this one org of to think about what's possible. Now, the challenge with that is it creates some tough expectations at times because the client thinks they're getting all of this when they buy, which they're not. There's a lot of customization in there and such. But the key here is thinking about the device of the demo. And I like your analogy of thinking about applying a little bit of heat and oil in that when I do this demo, it's not just about me validating that I heard what the customer said and I'm turning it into something material that I can validate with the customer or the client, but I also want to do it in such a way that creates that kind of stimulates thinking, right? It highlights dead ends. It
Amen.
smokes out like gaps and problems.
I love it. It's like so many demos keep the popcorn on the burner too long and it burns, and then no one wants to eat it, right? Or they don't have
Right,
the
and the
right leads to
smell,
know.
everybody can smell. They're like, ooh, there's burnt popcorn in the room.
Yeah, I've got a thought I've said a time or two, which is demo is a four-letter word, man. It's like no one really wants a demo. They just want a solution and they want to have a conversation about however, whatever it is you have impacts them and affects them. And but yet everyone in the industry, well, I shouldn't say everyone, but I see this every day. People send me demos and they'll say, like, hey, analyze the quality of my demo. How am I doing? And usually what I find is they suck. And it's because it's the diatribe, the hardware tour. It's I'm going to show you the beginning. We're going to go to setup mode. We're going to talk about all this stuff that nobody really cares about. And instead of just getting to what they need and saying, like, man, if I understood you correctly, this is what you said you needed. If it makes sense, let's just do that. Let's just go there. I don't need your corporate overview slide, and I don't need that setup mode, and I don't need, how everything was manufactured or configured. I just want to see how it works. And we can do that and wrap it in a story. Oh my goodness. I mean, the results I hear from my customers that do that correctly, which is not doing a demo, turning it into a conversation and a story, the success is tremendous. I
Yeah,
get
so I'm curious. I'd like to talk back. You talked about how you really like the pre-sales aspect. And for me, I'm really big on people first concerns. And I think pre-sales is very important because that's that kind of point of alignment where you're figuring out, do we actually have something that can help this person? Are we wasting their time and continuing to kind of drag them along? I'm curious if you go back into your, kind of we were back in junior high, but sometime after that, when you talk about, maybe some anecdotes that you've seen, some examples of kind of some things that happened in the pre-sales that really weren't helpful at all, and in fact were potentially even detrimental to the
Oh,
people
yeah.
that were participating in that process. As some people, listeners might be thinking about like, oh yeah, like I see those things. I didn't realize the impact that that was having. I think sometimes it's really helpful to kind of help people recognize that these small little events actually sometimes have these kind of downstream impacts that really negatively affect people and what that business is trying to accomplish.
Yeah. It kind of makes me think of a story, if you're interested in, of actually the worst sales cycle and worst deal that I've ever had in my entire career. One that's so bad, I might even get emotional thinking way back to the day.
Wow.
If you're interested, I'll share it with you real
Please.
quick. It was probably back in about 1998. I was working as the Salesforce guys will love this with a CRM solution. It was called Vantiv. Biggest competitor was Siebel, and we were going at it. I was pretty new to the career. I transferred over, but it was the first time I truly became a pre-sales consultant. And my boss came over and he said, "Paul, this is a huge opportunity. Everyone's pretty busy, and I really need someone who can focus." So me being the F&G friendly new guy, he gave me this big giant RFP, and he said, "You march down to the conference room, sit down, and I want you to read this thing cover to cover." As a matter of fact, he said, "There's a lot of features and requirements in there. And I want you to figure out not only what we can do, but I want a complete list by the end of the day of what we cannot do." And I said, "You got it." Now, what was really cool about this Vantiv interface was that it had a Visual Basic Designer in it. So if there wasn't a feature, if there wasn't capabilities and a customer needed it, we could build it. And so could our customers. And so we modified and tailored every demo to, the greatest extent possible. And I still think people should do that today. Personalize your demo and your story to your customer. And so I did. And I came back with this list. And he said, "Well, here's the deal, Paul." He said, "The demo's in 3 weeks. Just go ahead and move into that conference room. I'm going to hold it for you for the next 3 weeks. And you're going to build every feature and function that we can't do into that product. Can you do it?" And I said, "You bet. Programming backgrounds, love customers. I'm ready for the challenge." Well, at the end of the first week, he came back and he said, "How are you doing?" And I probably gave him that look of terror. And I said, "I'm so far behind schedule. There's no way, absolutely no way I'm gonna get this done. This is huge." He said, "Well, call your buddy from Dallas, fly him up here over the weekend, and he's gonna work with you next week. I'll clear his calendar." And that happened.
Wow.
So now there's two of us, 18, 20-hour days, just killing ourselves. At the end of that week, we both said, "Boss, oh my goodness, it ain't happening. Like, we're so far behind." And he said, "No problem. I'm going to clear a calendar of another of your buddies from Minnesota. Guy was awesome. Flew down. Now the third week, we've got three people pounding out code. And the night before the demo, about 11
Wow.
o'clock, we finished the last string of text and code. We present this thing just as my boss told me to do, top to bottom. He said, here's the strategy. We're going to present everything in their feature function list from top to bottom. You start at the top, work your way down, turn in the page, go. And that's exactly what I did. At
Wow.
the end of the day, 8 hours of a demo, we got through every feature and we checked off everything on the list. And when we left, we were on cloud nine. I mean, I'm
Did you
getting a
say that
smack
the
on the
demo
back.
took 8 hours?
It did 8 hours and we got through
Wow.
everything. So of course the team and the account exec, I'm getting the high fives. Good job. Let's go have a fancy meal and a drink. Well, we got a phone call and they said, wow, that was impressive. Like never anticipated ever that a vendor or a software provider could do so much. So as a matter of fact, it was just so robust, we want to see it again. We said, you bet. So we polished it up. We made it even more beautiful. And just like my boss said, do it again. And we did. Let me fast forward. Now we're a couple of weeks past that second demo. Of course, I was the hero of the day at the moment. And the customer called our VP of sales and he said this, like, thank you so much. That was amazing. Your product is so robust. But I gotta be honest, it is too complex. It was too confusing. And this was for a field service group that was had about 1,000 or 2,000 remote field agents that were supposed to update the CRM system from the field every day. And they said, we just can't see our sales team using it. Now, what was so amazing about this, and I love this guy, he was our VP of sales and he was quick on his feet. He always had the strategy, if we can't win, nobody will win. And he said, hey, I'll tell you what, this is a $250,000 deal. It's the biggest in the pipeline. The execs are calling weekly, even down to my level to find out what's going on. And Don had said, you know, you're right. Your sales teams wouldn't use it. I've been in sales my entire career and I lead a team and we wouldn't use it either. So here's what you do. Instead of rolling it out to 2,000 field service agents, just hire five admins. And these field service reps can call in and give them their information. And think about this, like it's going to cost you a lot less. The change management is going to be dramatically reduced. You get consistency of data because your five men are so perfectly trained. And as he got out his calculator, he said, instead of $250,000, I can do it for 10. We reverse engineered a $250,000 deal to $10,000, of which the customer said, you're crazy. Goodbye. We are done to
Wow.
zero. We stole victory. From the, I guess, defeat from the jaws of victory, if I'm saying that correctly. But it was, I remember that day like it was yesterday, even though it was 25 years ago or more. Because they came out and they told us, Don told us the story, and he said, everyone to the conference room, we're gonna have a debrief. And now as new, I'm very generally agreeable. And it felt like someone kicked me in the gut or lower. And I said, dude, I haven't seen my family in 3 weeks. Like I'm crushed. Can we please, can we just please meet tomorrow? And he said, okay, get out of here, right? But I remember how it deflated me. It took me months to get over it. I could literally,
Yeah, you
I
went through a
lost
lot
my
of
job.
trauma.
Yeah, I went, well, I mean, I just killed myself for those weeks. And, but I remember like being 100% invested. Of course, it's the only deal I was working. So I got a goose egg for for 6 months, essentially. Didn't look real good for the FNG, I mean, the friendly new guy. But what I learned was like, wait a second, like, you know what we didn't do? You know what never happened in that entire story? I actually guess. If you think back to your career, what might have been the one thing I didn't say we did that we should have done?
Well, I think, did you prioritize what would be the most valuable and connect to their key problems?
Ah, that's the connect to the key problems, what I was looking for. You know, the first time I spoke to that client was 8 a.m. or 7:30 a.m. when we arrived on site. I never
Demo
did this
day.
guy.
Demo
It was
day,
demo
right?
day. We didn't know how to prioritize because we never asked. I was given a list and I was told to go build it. But here's what we learned in that final debrief. The customer bought the RFP. They didn't need those features. And we didn't know what they needed. And so we solved a problem that didn't exist for the client because they acquired the most robust RFP template that they could. And that's why it took 8 or 9 man weeks essentially of time to produce what we did, but it was an absolute failure. And so I learned at that moment, like, wait a second. Anytime someone gives me a book of an RFP and it's not prioritized, one of the things I'm going to do is send it back and say, would you prioritize it? And must have, need to have, want to have. And better yet, I'm not even going to call it discovery. I just need to do a demo prep call with you. I want to find out what's truly critical, what your main features are, what problems, and how it's impacting you. And now the story in the demo wouldn't have been feature-based. It would have been story-based. And it
Right.
wouldn't have been a demo. It would have been a story and a conversation so that we can see the same success my customers see now. But that was probably the worst moment and the biggest lesson I've ever learned. I guess here's the one thing, and I'll stop for a moment. But like, if you're out and you're doing sales calls or you're doing demonstrations and you're showing the same demo every time, I've got bad news for you. You should start updating your resume because AI is here. Automated demo and demo automation is here. Demo bots are here. And if you haven't figured out what your customer really needs, how to give it to them quickly, and what the impact is by truly having a conversation using AI as a tool, you'll be replaced. And it's going to happen fast.
That's a great example. And just to extrapolate that, so there wasn't just the trauma of like what you had to go through, giving up with the time with your family, your own work-life balance for those weeks. The business is paying you, it's paying the guy from Minnesota, it's paying the all the other people to come help you, it's paying, like all that staff. And in addition to just losing the deal, the 250K, you had all of that sunk cost and all the people who had
All
to
trapped.
invest in all of that. And what I've seen as well is that when this doesn't go well, the people who are involved, it becomes like a it becomes like an allergy. They don't even want to be like, they end up quitting and going and finding another job because they're just like, this whole thing was a disaster. Like, I don't want people asking questions about it. I don't want to have to tell any stories about it anymore. I just want to walk away from it. So you end up losing your most valuable asset, which is your people, because this whole software exercise went off the rails. And what's interesting is
Absolutely.
that in the case of a software company, that's maybe a lesser frequent activity. But in the case of a consulting, organization, this is kind of a rinse and repeat process that you're going to do multiple times. I mean, I look at it as kind of like bookends. You start out the process of like, oh, we've highlighted a need. And then ultimately the resolution or the end of that is that I need to validate that that need can be met with a
Yes.
solution, right? And I'm doing this, I'm selling change to, I'm selling a new vision, a new future state to that stakeholder every day. And so if I don't know how to do this really well, right, of asking really good questions up front, because I don't think people associate that when they say do a demo, I don't think they immediately go to, well, okay, great. I need to understand like the key plot to the story so that I can really tell my demo. They talk about the talk track that like the features that need to be shown, or like the vantage point is usually from the software side, or maybe something they were given, which may or may not be trustworthy. Right. So I'm personally allergic to that. I generally don't trust anyone else's discovery. That's just me. I'll take a food for thought from what they have, but I generally always want to have direct impact with the client because reading between the lines and hearing, I mean, for example, I'll highlight one thing I've seen. I had an office manager who needed, they were talking about reporting. I need to be able to do this kind of reporting. We have to send it out and have a technical guy do this, that, and the other. Ultimately, when we really distilled it down, it wasn't actually about the reporting. The reporting was one example of many things that were taking her time, and she was no longer able to go and have dinner with her family, and she wasn't able to go to her son's Little League
Wow.
game. The entire thing was, I need to be able to have dinner with my family and go to my kids' Little League games. Reporting was just one example of something that was time consuming and was taking away. There were numerous others,
Goodness.
but we could have really drilled down into the reporting as though that's what was the issue, but it wasn't the issue. The issue
No.
was, what's the best way to get her home for dinner and to go to her son's baseball games? That was
Yeah.
the issue.
So I look at it, the critical business issue you were solving was a quality of life. It was, and I'm sure that had many other implications, inability to
Yeah, there's
make
a technical
decisions and so
impact,
forth.
but it's not really a technical solve alone.
If you're interested, I'd be happy to tell you that one of the biggest and best pieces of advice I ever got when I was younger in my career.
Yeah, who can resist?
A person told me this, Paul, if you ask the right questions, the customer will tell you exactly what you need to say. They'll forgotten they told you by the time you repeat it, but all you have to do is repeat what they told you, and they will think you're brilliant. And I've tested that because, obviously you need to do good discovery. You need to ask the right questions. But if you're asking the right questions, the customer will tell you exactly what you need to say. And John, I mean, just to go back to say, hey, this reporting is awesome. It saves you traumatic amounts and crazy amounts of time and allows you to make better business decisions so you can generate, another $1 million in your business. But here's the bottom line. With this reporting solution, you get to see your kids' games on the weekend without having to worry or go back to work on the weekend, right? And all of a sudden, they told you what to say. It was about the weekends and it was about the kids. And all of a sudden, what becomes like data-driven value conversations are now pushed by quality of life and the benefits that have a true impact on our audience or our customers or our prospects. And it's that impact that we have to find. Because ultimately, that's what's going to move them to the emotional state of, change is hard, but we have to show change so compelling that the pain to stay the same is less than the pain to change. And so, when we can paint that vision of a brighter future and time with the children, all of a sudden, the demo is a little bit easier and the
I remember
sales
that. Yeah, there's
are
a
a bit
drawing
easier.
of that in the book. I remember the little the seesaw. I think it's either in Great Demo or it's in the spin selling book by Huthwaite. I remember a picture of
Interesting. Good.
that.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's one of the things that I learned early in my career is ask the right questions and your job becomes very easy because you just have to repeat what someone has already told you.
No, it's a great point. And the parroting element, it's just listening well, and being able to respond to that is it demonstrates a lot. So this is good. I'd love to talk a little bit about, kind of what you see in the present day, right? As it relates to, right, everybody who is listening here is likely related to the sales and growth process in their respective businesses. I mean, ultimately nowadays, everybody needs to be enlisted into, sales and supporting sales in some way. So I'm curious, as you think about pre-sales and that kind of qualification process in our current era, what do you see kind of today is happening, and what does the future look like from your perspective?
I'm super excited about the new tech that's allowing us to do this more intelligently. Everyone's, on the AI or ChatGPT craze, but what I've found is that I can get insights and I can do discovery far faster than I've ever been able to do before. And so, like the efficiency that I've gained from that, but more importantly, the credibility that I can bring to a sales call. I can admit something that I probably shouldn't. And I might be a little bit ashamed of, but maybe this happens to folks on occasion. You ever have that call coming up with a new call or a new client or prospect? You're crammed and you're slammed and you got back-to-back meetings. And about 3 minutes before you jump on that call, you're like, what am I doing? Who am I meeting with? And what do I need to
Right.
talk
I should learn
about?
something about them.
I should know a little something about them. Absolutely. And what I found is I've got a script that I use in AI, which is, well, there's a methodology in Great Demo. You're probably familiar with it, John. It's called the situation slide. And it's got six key pieces of information. And it's generally what we would need to present to tell a story. And so what I found is, and I've programmed a ChatGPT to do this for me, is like, hey, for this particular company, create a situation slide for me around one of their most common use cases and average clients, let's say. And then script that out. And what it says is, Paul, here's the client in the industry. Here's their critical business issue or something that's generally dramatically impacting their business. It would generally cause these types of problems. Here's the features and capabilities that are needed, the value that would be generated, and maybe some sample timeline. And as a matter of fact, I can do that three or four times and literally walk into the meeting in 5 minutes or less with four different stories that I could tell, or five or quick ways to identify what they need. And so what I found, it's the fastest way to come up to speed on a business, what they do, what they offer, what the capabilities are. But even then, sometimes they'll ask me for an example and I'll say, if I was going to present your solution, I would do this. And since it's a methodology, I literally look at my screen, I rattle off five bullet points and it works. As a matter of fact, I think I've had several job offers where they go, that's actually better than I've seen anyone do before. Like, would you like to join us? And I go, no, I'd like to train you on how to do that.
Sure.
But so what I found is like now all of a sudden we become super discoverers. We can, as anyone who's talking to the client, we can dramatically increase and elevate our level of perceived aptitude and skill and knowledge of the business just by simply using one or two prompts to do discovery more efficiently, but to come up with the storylines that are almost perfectly correlated to that person, their job title, the industry, how they're measured, the KPIs that they're probably measured on, which are correlated to the problems that they're most likely struggling with. And all of a sudden, like, boom, I've literally prepped for calls in less than 3 minutes. I wouldn't always advise that, but I think that what gets me the most excited is now all of a sudden we're coming up to speed faster. We're articulating needs of the client faster. We're giving them menus, and our perceived credibility and trust shoots up so that we can become the trusted advisor, as opposed to the weirdo who's asking the same question that's already been asked 3 times and is already on the website and relevant. Where we
Yeah,
lose our trust.
I love it. And I love that, there's a little bit of, I mean, the acceleration is amazing. And I think there's a really appropriate level of risk taking, which I really like there, in that, you might miss the target exactly for what the customer needs, right? For what their business really goes after. But that's, I think, one in like incorrect information like that is actually a motivator to get people to talk. So I actually intentionally introduce incorrect information sometimes, because quiet people, they won't tell you what they want, but if you tell them what they want, they'll tell you why it's wrong. And so I get them to participate in the process by just being a little bit off the mark and being like, "Oh, I totally understand. I had some conjecture in here, which I mentioned from the beginning. And so thank you for clarifying. So can you highlight more about that?" And now they're a participant in the conversation. And it was because I took a little risk in knowing who they were and
I love
asserted
that.
something that they
Yeah.
were able to correct me and brought them in for the participation. So I think I love that, because it's not that I'm going in and asking questions about my perspective, is saying, "Well, this is what our product does. This is what my solution does. Do you like it?" Well, no, I'm really going, trying to overemphasize to say, "No, this is what you're about. This is what I understand your needs are. And this is what I see in your industry, which you may or may not be aware of, right? Am I on the right track?" And then they can correct
Yes.
and participate in the
Oh my
process.
goodness, that is so good. I love that, John. You're right on. Because I think what we can need to do is establish the baseline pretty quickly. But everyone's looking to how do we position a competitive differentiation or our new capabilities, and we think it's unique and it's very, very valuable. But so if you can establish the baseline and then transition the client's vision just a bit to something that they didn't know about, and it could be a competitive differentiator, then all of a sudden you go from being a column B or column C to column A. Because I mean, we've known from the research that customers are doing over 50% of the research outside of talking to a vendor. They think they know what they want when they actually come and look for the demo or look for a solution. And when you can find out first what they know, what they think they need, what their vision is, and sometimes you pull it out by telling a quick story, but then you say, I'm curious. Another customer said that this capability and feature was super value, and this is why, and this is what they said the value of it was. Man, I'm curious, would that be something that might help you? And when the answer to that is yes, boom, you just introduced your competitive differentiator.
Yes.
With a wonderful story, and then you got it. So, man, I'm glad you mentioned that.
No, it's good. I think it's an area where I would encourage people to take more risk, right? To try and learn more
Absolutely.
about your customer, more about their competitors, right? And as you're speaking about, right, AI makes that so much more accessible today.
Oh, yeah.
Comparison shopping, like the key elements. So there's no reason why we shouldn't be more educated and ready to add value in that conversation in a way that's relevant. Because boy, do we know that how much software is created that is a solution in search of a problem, right? It's a hobby horse, it's a
Sure.
novelty. In fact, there was another organization called Elements Cloud in the Salesforce ecosystem. They do metadata analysis and help with technical discovery. Their data shows that 50% of solutions that are configured into Salesforce never get used. 50%.
Oh
So
my
you think
goodness.
the impact
I
on
mean,
that, what kind of demo, what kind of storytelling, what kind of validation and discovery was done on all of those solutions, that half of which never get used.
I think that's the soundbite that I'm going to, one of the sound bites I want to pull from this podcast. 50% of capabilities implemented, not used. So if we knew what those were, they're truly not going to be used. Think about the value you could generate for that customer by a faster implementation. They get to value faster. There's less confusion, less training. It doesn't compound. And when we think about the long-term customer success, what a huge implication to finding value, but then also leaving something there that you can move them into at a later date if necessary. That's really insightful. I would ask, are there any studies on that I could see? And is that something your listeners might be interested in as well? Because I think that's huge.
You know, I'm not sure. I mean, I know that there's data from Elements Cloud that has this insight around the 50%. It'd be very interesting. You know, it's anonymized data. So, but I think the concept today of what we would call technical debt is a very significant impact. And a lot of what is called technical debt today was unused. Essentially, it's like, you know, it's the barnacles on the whale, right? It's there, and we would love to shed them because nobody makes use of them. They're just parasites. We have to wade through it, and it's just in our way now. And every organization deals with that, partially also because it may be bad discovery, but also just that sense of, you know, the element of addition. People are always adding new things, but not thinking about what I can remove. And I think when you think about storytelling, in my opinion, every technical solution ultimately comes back to some kind of a people-first concern inside the organization. Whether that's the business needs more revenue, and what that means is that, right, we need to be able to provide XYZ for our customers. We need to be able to provide. It ultimately comes back to some human endeavor that needs to be improved. And the more we can tie into that by looking through whatever the initial surface level solution or description is, and dive down deep into what is the human factor, what's the people first concern that's really driving this across the stakeholders, right? So this is now going back to the chain of pain, or the element of saying, like, okay, we have our first, second, third, fourth, fifth level of people who are impacted by this. The more we can clue into that and introduce that element into our conversations and the storytelling that we're giving in our demo, now the software is just a visual aid. It's not actually the story.
Oh, you're right. You are absolutely right. Yeah, and that's why we suggest things like micro demos. There was some research done by Gong a while ago, and they analyzed about 69,000 demos. So Gong is, you know, they're an AI organization, I would call them almost like a performance enhancing. I don't know, I'm butchering
Yeah,
their
so there's
elevator
like
speech
an
on
AI
that,
tool that analyzes phone calls, conversations, et
there you
cetera. It
go.
talks about sentiment. They talk about participation, ratios, right? They provide a lot of insight about that call.
So they actually took a bunch of demos essentially and converted them, you know, which was text or speech to text, and they used AI and machine learning. And this was years ago that they did this, but they analyzed something that was very important. So when they took all of these sales calls and demos and then correlated them to win loss data in CRMs, they said, like, about the middle of your demonstration or your call, that's when the demo starts getting really deep. In the initial analysis, they said there was not one single instance of a demo that went to a win that involved more than 67 seconds of pitching. Basically, if you're doing a demo in that phase of the demo and it's deep and you're talking for more than 67 seconds, you're losing. You've lost your audience because it's not a conversation, it's a diatribe. Now, I'll let some of your listeners off the hook here. They did it with 3 million, and most of the principles were applied, but instead of 67 seconds, it went a little bit longer. But what I want folks to remember, like, if you're just talking about all the capabilities, all the features, and you're speaking for long periods of time, it's not a good situation. What you need to do is break it up into micro demos, smaller pieces, be intelligent enough to ask the questions, and not the question of, like, any questions, because that's a closed-ended question. It's horrible. But hey, what thoughts, observations, feedback, comments, you know, does that generate for you, client? And then smile and stare at your camera and don't say a word until they answer you. What you find is, once again, your demo turns into a conversation and you're still doing your discovery, finding out how it's applicable and what the value is to them. So I think I just went on a tangent there.
No, I like it. And I think, the a key takeaway I heard from that is because your demo is a visual aid, I know in your example, you spent 3 weeks on it, a lot of nights and weekends. And so when you're in the demo, I can't imagine a demo going for 8 hours. But when you're in the demo, you're committed to your script because you're so vested in what you produced. So the whole vantage point is somewhat skewed because you want to demonstrate everything that you built because you invested so much time and effort into building it. But that, by definition, starts to get in the way of what if in the
My
conversation
goodness.
you find that the client's like, oh, everything that you did was cool, but it's actually not what we want to talk about today. Well, now you have a conundrum because you're like, well, do I stick with my focus, what I intended to do, my agenda, what I feel safe, what I'm not insecure about? Or do I let us venture off and be like, okay, cool. Well, I'm glad this was a catalyst to bring up something that's more important. Let's talk about that. And where necessary or where
Exactly.
valuable, I can maybe highlight some examples of where we can speak to that. But really,
And
let's go
yep.
and let's follow your needs to and see what that discovers for us. That I think is a
Yeah.
very important but challenging decision for people.
It is. I was heading up pre-sales at this really cool higher education tech company. They basically had an ERP for colleges. The company was called Ellucian, and I had the honor of working with them for a couple of years. And it was interesting because the way that we prepped for demos changed dramatically. We didn't script out 8 hours of demos. And actually, at Ellucian, demos could take days because you had major university ERP situations. So a lot of different sections to the demo. But what I started doing is after we trained on the great demo doing discovery methodology, was we never did the preps that we typically would do for demos. I would say create your situation slides. Can you complete that based upon true discovery with the client? You know what's critical to them and what capabilities that they need, what value they believe they might be able to get from it. And if they had that, and one additional step, which is call an illustration, a picture, I didn't need to see the demo because I knew the demo was going to be a conversation and dynamic based upon how we learned to engage with the client. So I could literally, and any deal over $500,000, I inspected all those things myself. But I could quickly say, like, yes. You know what the customer needs. You know, and you have a vision for how to solve it. And you also know how to engage an audience and ask questions. And that's why we were able to reduce the number of demos it took to win by 20%. With my team of 86 folks, it was like 16 people I got back on my team. And we dramatically increased the win rate by 50% for our number one US product at the time. And so it's interesting. I love what you're saying. It's pulling it into smaller pieces. Pulling what's relevant to the client. It's not scheduling or having a diatribe or thinking you have to get to every feature. It's truly turning that solution representation into a conversation.
And it's so important. I mean, we think about, right, there's a lot of competition that's in the marketplace today. So, every Salesforce Pro, whether you're on the ISV side or on the consulting side,
Amen.
needs to take these things into account because we do need, they do want better win rates, right? They do want to better
Yeah.
clarify to the client and back to the people first concerns. That's what the client needs. The client doesn't want to have more and more calls and then be in a, kind of in that sense of like, I don't recognize any signal from all this noise. That makes them lose sleep at night because they're like, we need have this problem to solve. I don't actually know who's going to be able to solve it. And now it's like the only thing I go to is price because I have no other criteria to actually differentiate and make any
Yeah.
decisions.
Amen. I agree. And I also think, and I love that comment on price. That's so good. I also think that it has downstream effects. So if you haven't done it really good and you've implemented more features than necessary as an example, that means your customer sat ratings aren't going to be as strong and your retention rates could be compromised. And you've set your customer success team up for a real big challenge. And so I think there needs to be a lot of communication throughout the entire life cycle of a customer internally as a team. But I think, I think giving them exactly what they want is very important,
That's good. Well,
whether
once you
you're,
know what they want, right? And that's the key is you have to find ways to get to what they want and not just
absolutely.
assume that we know what they want, right?
Yeah.
Well, this is good. So
What's your
thinking
perspective?
about, like thinking about some takeaways, because I think we could talk all day, but we eventually do need to wrap up an episode here. but
I have
which
no
is
passion for this
great.
subject. I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm curious as far as when you think about if there's top three things that people as they're thinking about their own teams, right? Thinking about how can I go and evaluate, maybe go to my team and see how are we doing this? How do I gauge whether or not we are taking some of these elements into account, turning demos into conversations, right? Maybe you have a few recommendations that people can take away and as kind of next steps to help
You
their
bet.
world.
I've got a couple of things. First of all, if you want to hit me up on LinkedIn, Paul H. Pierce on LinkedIn, do that. Send me a demo. Record your demo and send it to me. I want a transcript so I can analyze it quickly and read it faster than I can watch it. But I would love to tell you, like, here's what you're doing that's really awesome. Here's some considerations that are going to dramatically increase engagement and the speed in which you do that. Like, so that's one. But using technologies like Gong, you can also do that yourself, at least to record it and listen to it as a team and continually have that conversation. So first, go back and analyze and look at those things. I'd be happy to help you with that free of charge. Literally, just if you can send me a transcript, a demo, and I can read it quickly, I've got a template. I'd be happy to
That's
supply
great. I
some
appreciate it.
feedback.
That's a great offer.
So a couple other things that I always suggest is, just treat your conversation like you're going out to eat. The world has taught us how to have conversations, how to treat customers. We see it in modern media. We see it every time we go to a restaurant, but yet we don't use these same simple principles, even the way grocery stores present food to us. We can use those same concepts in our interactions with our clients. So the first thing I would suggest is use a menu. It's kind of like an agenda, but the client gets to choose what they want to eat. And instead of presenting the food item in the description and the price, talk about the true critical business issues that you solve and the value that customer, if you've done your discovery, or another customer like that has received. And if I could say, like, hey, here's three or four things that people in your positions at these types of industries, our other customers have said were important to them. Number one, it's, how to increase sales effectiveness and drive $1 million in revenue, where one organization did something like this. Or number two, it's reducing whatever it is, right? And you literally give them three or four options and then stop and say, of those three or four, what's most relevant to you? What do you want to talk about first? And all of a sudden, you're talking about what they want to talk about, which is another way to identify what their key priorities are. Even in perfect discovery, you're going to have people in that meeting that you've never met. And that's an instant way to prioritize what they want. And you back it up with a story. So I suggest using the menu as the other concept. And the last thing, this goes all the way back to the when Great Demo was founded, and our tagline, which is do the last thing first. Don't go to setup mode. Don't give them all the features. Literally give them that end result first and say, like, you said you needed graphs and reporting, specific this type of report, and here it is. And you show it to them and you say, so hopefully you can see how much additional business you could generate, which would be a value statement. And then I want you to stop and just say, how does that compare with like your vision? What do you think? And what you'll find instead of the diatribe demo that goes 12 minutes and there's zero questions, there'll be an explosion of questions where you're like, that's exactly what I need. How did you do that? And then your demo becomes the illustration essentially of, well, you want to see how to do it? Yeah, it's simply just log in and click this button and I get the graph.
Yeah, well,
Look
now they
how
all have
easy it is.
appetite. They have an attention
Yeah.
appetite to actually experience all of
Attention.
that.
That's brilliant. That's what a great tie back to the menu. And so using the menu approach, doing the last thing first, beginning discovery, those are all things I think that are really, really important that I hope folks will think about in ways to engage. So I can tell you this. Here's one metric, I guess. If you're doing a solution presentation to your customer and you've spoken for 8 to 12 minutes and you stop and you say, are there any questions? And there are none. You're not doing a good job. It's not going very well. You've not engaged your client. They won't remember any of it. And chances are they're not buying it. And so by using some of these tricks, you can dramatically increase engagement and turn your demo, the four-letter word, into a conversation.
Yeah, I mean, a small aspect there is that really the client should be interrupting you during your demo. That's actually a really good thing to be like, hey, one sec before you move on. Many
Yes.
times that can be discouraged, where people feel like that's taking me off my script, but that's precisely what you want, is the client has now found a reason to engage you and give you clarity into what they're interested in.
Yeah,
Right?
because if you think you need a script as opposed to an outline,
Yeah.
chances are you're looking for the wrong things and you're
Yeah.
not having a conversation. Yeah.
No, it's a very good point. And so this is helpful because every Salesforce Pro is having to use software, show the software, and continue to revise and improve that software. And so this is just a rinse and repeat process. So the better you become at
Oh,
it,
yes.
right? And the higher frequency you do it, right? The better outcomes you're going to have.
Conversations are a lot more fun than demos because you learn something
Yeah.
about your client.
It's very true. Well, excellent, Paul. This has been a great conversation, and very, very much appreciate your offer. We'll have in the show notes, we'll have your LinkedIn profile link there so people can
Thank you.
easily get to it. That was a very kind gesture, and appreciate you offering that to our audience. Thank you so much for your
You're
time
welcome.
today.
Hey, just one additional thing if anyone's interested. If you hit me up on LinkedIn, I've got a link that says hit our newsletter, subscribe to our newsletter. So when it comes to these types of topics, discovery, storytelling, and demos, we release an article a week. They're free. Well, we've always got some insights, some statistics, something to share. And once a month, I produce a newsletter. Once again, it's free. So if you want to keep up to date, have insightful information from some of the world's best thought leaders around these topics, there's just a couple of things that you can get that might help you, whether it's a demo review or all those free articles that we're releasing that we announce in our newsletter and online on LinkedIn.
Excellent.
It's available. So, John, thanks, man. This has been a fun conversation. I could do this all day. Real enjoy speaking with you, and I think you're doing an amazing thing for Salesforce and anyone who's got a chance to listen to your podcast. So it's just an honor to
Awesome.
be here and really enjoy getting to know you a little bit.
All right. Appreciate it, Paul. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for joining us on another episode of Salesforce Trails and Trials. If you found this episode valuable, we would love your help reaching others. Please subscribe, leave us a 5-star review, and share this with another who would benefit.